Coming up next on the program, when Mary Lou Norden got married in 1946, she vowed that she'd be there in sickness and in health. She had a home in Connecticut and one son and a daughter on the way. There was certainly never a thought or a mention of the D word.
No, I didn't even think about divorce. I mean, didn't even think about it. It was actually a shocking thing if somebody was divorced. And you wondered what happened, or maybe it was a hush-hush thing. You didn't talk about it very much.
And yet when Mary Lou's husband told her he wanted a divorce, she was the one who was sent on a trip to a divorce ranch. A divorce ranch in Reno, Nevada. I'll talk with her about that in just a moment. I'm Dick Gordon from American Public Media. This is The Story. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Story. Marriage is not a good place for someone who bets on the odds. That's because these days about 50% of people who get married in the U.S. wind up separated or divorced. In 1946, when Mary Lou Norden got married, the very idea that divorce might become such a common thing wasn't even considered. Divorce was not a word used casually in polite conversation. Mary Lou and her husband were dance teachers, and their life seemed perfect to her. But Mary Lou had started to notice a change in her husband. At the time, they had a 4-year-old son, and Mary Lou was 8 months pregnant with their daughter. And after a particularly frustrating afternoon, Mary Lou decided to talk to her husband.
So I set our little boy in front of the TV watching Howdy Doody or something, and I went in and I said, what's the matter? And he said, well, I just don't love you anymore. And that was like a bomb being dropped, right? Like it was Hiroshima or something. It was terrible. And I didn't know what to do. I was so upset and so shocked. I said, but why? I mean, we're going to have a baby, another wonderful little child. And why? And it seemed as though he had definitely made up his mind that this was what he wanted. So I decided inside my little head, and I said to myself, well, I'm just going to see this through, and I'm going to be as pleasant as possible, and we're just going to live in our little house and do our thing, and hopefully by the time the baby comes, he will have changed his mind. Well, the baby came, and he didn't change his mind. He wouldn't sleep in the same room with me with the baby, and so I asked him, you know, one night I said, well, why don't you come and sleep? She never wakes up. She's fabulous, you know. She only wakes up for the 2 o'clock feeding or whatever. And he said, no, I don't love you, and I just don't want anything to do with you. And you know, today, that still upsets me. But I got over it.
It seems like such a cruel way to say it.
It was. So one day, gosh, I think it was after the baby was born, so it was like 2 weeks later, he said, well, I've been downtown and I've spoken to a lawyer. I never met the lawyer. I never talked to the man. And the lawyer says that he's never seen such a compatible breakup. I said, breakup? What do you mean? He said, we're getting a divorce, and I'm sending you to a divorce ranch. I said, what? Divorce ranch? I said, I never heard of such a thing.
In Mary Lou Norden's home state of Connecticut, it would have taken another year of living together to get a divorce. Irreconcilable differences just wouldn't cut it. But in the state of Nevada, it only took 6 weeks to establish residency, and a divorce could be had like that. So Mary Lou and her 4-year-old son packed their bags. Her newborn baby had to stay behind with relatives. And she headed to Reno, where they were greeted at the airport by the owner of the Pyramid Lake Ranch, a place specifically for people who would be waiting the 6 weeks to be eligible for a divorce.
And so he took us out to the little woody station wagon, and we got in and we drove Woody's station wagon, and we got in and we drove through a big arch sign that says the biggest little city in the world. And on one side is Washoe County Courthouse, where everybody gets their divorce degrees. And across the street is a chapel to get married in.
In case you've already decided where you're going after the divorce.
Right. And it was really bizarre. It was bizarre. It was like being on another planet and being totally in a movie somewhere. And anyway, we drove 90 miles an hour, whizzing through the desert, and you knock off all these poor jackrabbits that come in your path. It was wild, you know? And we finally get to this beautiful lake with these beautiful mountains, and I was shown around. We stayed in a cabin and little white clapboard with green tiled roofs. And then she said, we're having a barbecue tonight, so you got to come right after you get settled. So we go to the barbecue and was sitting there by myself. And that's when I met this fellow who came by and really thought I was something else, and really, I was the new girl. And I think that's what he was looking for. You know,
did he sweep you off your feet, Mary Lou?
Well, he certainly gave me the impression that I was somebody really worthwhile, which really helped my ego a lot. Let's put it that way.
Now, you have to help my imagination here. I'm thinking to myself that there are a whole bunch of people, many of whom don't want to be at the divorce ranch, but given the fact that they're there and they're young and fit and their marriage is coming to an end, that there's probably a fair amount of partying going on or drinking or dancing.
Oh, yeah. Oh yes. Well, they had at the ranch, they had what is called the trading post, and that was the nightly place where everybody went, and then you sit at the bar and order a Moscow Mule. And have you ever had one of those?
Yeah, only one, actually.
Well, that was my favorite drink at the time. I only drank one a night, but I really liked it. Anyway, we dance and we talk, and you know, it was fun. We put the jukebox on; the old Wurlitzer would be going, you know, and songs like "Dream" and "How High the Moon," and it was great. I really enjoyed it. There's nothing like music that gets me going, and I just I was dancing by myself, even, you know. I danced with some cowboys occasionally, but I was dancing by myself and just whirling around and having a great old time. And people were applauding. And so, of course, that bolstered my morale tremendously.
And were there clubs, places to go?
Well, you had to go into Reno to do that.
Vegas wasn't Vegas at that point, right? Back in the 50s, Reno was the center of the action.
Vegas was like a dead little old tired desert hole at the time.
But there were clubs in Reno.
Oh, yes, yes. In fact, I went into town with my friend, my boyfriend there, and his buddy, and I got up on the bar at Harris and was dancing, and I would never have done that. My ex-husband would have not approved at all.
Yeah, but we don't care what he thinks now, do
we? No, no.
One time, Mary Lou Norden headed into town with her friends to see Frank Sinatra. Mary Lou and her husband had actually met Sinatra while performing with him on a television program. And so her pals whispered to Mary Lou.
They said, oh, Mary Lou, you've got to go and see Frank. And why don't you just go up to him and, you know, say hello? And they were getting some vicarious pleasure out of that, you know. So I said, okay, I'll try. So I got up my gumption and during a break of his show and singing, I went up to him and introduced myself and asked him if he remembered my ex-husband and so forth. He said, yes, how is he anyway? How's he doing? Is he here with you? And I said, no. Um, I'm getting a divorce here. And Frank looked at me with those blue eyes of his, and he said, "Oh, well, I'm sorry," he said. "That's how the cookie crumbles." And then he turned on his heels and smiled and went over to Ava. And so that was that. Yeah, well, I thought to myself afterwards, yes, you, Frank, you probably do know how the cookie crumbles.
Because a few of them crumbled in his lifetime.
Right. Anyway.
Who were the other performers who were there, others that you would have seen?
One gal in particular, she was a blonde and she had a big convertible. And so she invited all us women to hop in the convertible with her and drive up to Calneva Lodge, which is right on the border of Nevada and California. And so we all went and had – I had my first martini there, and I almost – I almost threw up. It was terrible. I guess I was good at drinking Moscow mules, but not martinis. Anyway, and so Nat King Cole was headlining there, and so they didn't want to go hear him, but I did. So, but I didn't have a ticket to get in, so I just stood at the door and I listened to him sing and just watched that beautiful face with a big white teeth grin, you know, and he just in his eyes and everything. He was great, really beautiful.
I would love to have seen him. I'd have taken you in.
He was special. He really was.
It sounds like summer camp. It just sounds great.
It kind of was like a summer camp in a way. Yeah, it really was.
Mm-hmm. And while you were there, I mean, when you go back to your room at night and Philip would be tucked in and you'd be lying in your bed and thinking, were you thinking to yourself, oh my gosh, this is going to end and then I'm going to be a divorcee. I'm going to, you know, and that's with whatever that meant back in the 50s. I mean, I guess there was some social stigma attached to that or shame. I don't know. You tell me.
Yeah, well, no, actually, I didn't think of it that way. It didn't bother me at all. It was like I was inwardly pulling myself together and being strong and believing in God and feeling like, you know, I've got my kids to think about and I've got to really go forward with this. So that's how I approached it, and I think it really helped me a lot.
And so at the end of the 6 weeks, then, what happened? Did your husband come out and the two of you appear before a judge?
No. That isn't the way it worked. And that is not the way it had to work back then. If you were the person getting the divorce, the other person didn't even have to be there. So I just went in on courtroom day, and it was very fast. And the judge just said, you know, this is incompatibility or whatever the thing was. And I mean, it was so long ago, Dick, I don't remember everything, but I do remember realizing with a rush that all of a sudden that was the end of it. That was, you know, with the bang of a gavel, my marriage of 5 years was gone.
And was that then with a sense of sadness or relief?
It was a mixture, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because I had buoyed myself up with the fact that I needed to, it was up to me. And so in a way, you know, I had a strength of purpose. And I think it did me a lot of good.
Yeah, listening to you tell the story of the divorce ranch makes it sound like it gave you a lot of confidence.
It did. It did. Because when I was married to him, I sort of lost myself. Everything was built around him, and I was always trying to please and trying to fit in. And, of course, when you try to do that, you do lose your way. And so I had come to the ranch sort of broken, and when I left, I was more of a whole. I was more myself.
After her divorce, Mary Lou Norden first moved to Denver, then to Los Angeles, a single mom starting out fresh. She stayed in show business. She sang with big bands in the Hollywood area and got on with her life. She also returned to dating. She was being wooed by a wealthy local bachelor. And one evening, she was expecting both her babysitter and her date to arrive.
I heard the doorbell ring, and I thought, oh, that's my date. And but then I heard my little boy answer the door, and I heard a strange man's voice, and I thought, oh, that's not him. Oh, so I got dressed real fast, and I go into the living room, and there, standing there,
oh. Go ahead, say it. He was gorgeous, wasn't he?
He was. He was tall, and he was smoking a pipe, and he looked down at me, and I looked up at him, and I said, who are you? And he said, well, I'm your babysitter.
What happened to the 17-year-old girlfriend?
That was his sister.
Oh, this was the brother of the babysitter.
Yes. And she evidently had said, oh, he's got to meet this gal down the street. So she went to the movies, and she had him come as in her place. So
it wasn't entirely an accident then, right?
No. No. And to this day, I still owe a lot to my sister-in-law. But
wait a minute. You still had to go out on a date with money bags. How did you manage that?
Yes, money bags. Money bags came to the door, and I had to introduce the gorgeous one and money bags. And then I left very reluctantly, and I couldn't wait to get home. And then when I got home, everything was dark because my sister had come home by that time. So I had to wait until the next morning. And so the next morning, I said sort of, you know, nonchalantly to my sister, I said, oh, you must have met, what was his name? I remembered his name, of course. And I said, what did you think of him? She said, oh, he was so nice. Oh, we had the best conversation and blah, blah, blah. She goes on and on. I got a little jealous and I thought, oh. And so I was afraid that maybe he liked her better than me. But no, it turned out that he liked me, and the next evening I invited him to a spaghetti dinner, and we stayed up all night just sitting and talking. And finally we got married, and we were married for almost 50 years. And then he died in 07, and we had three more children.
What a beautiful love story.
Yes, it was.
Tell me something, Mary Lou. Do you think that you'd have had the gumption to snare and keep him if you hadn't been through the ups and downs of the divorce in Connecticut and what you learned at the divorce ranch?
Oh, that's very interesting, Dick. No, nobody's ever asked me that. Yes, I just learned so much more about people and about myself.
Yeah, sounds like you had a kind of self-confidence, and you knew what you wanted rather than sitting back and waiting to be told what someone else wanted. You know?
Right, exactly. And I think that's very important. And I think that people that have been through a real, really bad rejection and what that feels like, you know, and thinking, oh, my gosh, this is, you know, my life is over, I can't go on, or, you know, there's always light at the end of the tunnel. And I think that's very important for people to realize that it is not the end of things, that it very well may be the beginning.
This is Mary Lou singing her hit song, Whisper. She recorded it at Capitol Records in 1955 with a 13-piece orchestra.
Whisper me a whisper. Whispers can be true.
Whisper. Mary Lou Norton joined me from the studios of Santa Fe Public Radio, and she's written a novel based on her time at that divorce ranch. She calls it Unbridled: Tales from a Divorce Ranch. You can find out more about the book by going to our website, and you can find us at thestory.org. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Story.
Whisper to me, whisper. Whisper, be my own. There's a time.
Support for the story comes from Burt's Bees, natural health and beauty care on a mission to make people's lives better, naturally, for over 25 years. Burt'sBees.com.
The story is a production of North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill.
American Public Media.